Good morning, Jamestown Harbor. Good to be with you. This morning, we are going to be in the book of Romans. So Romans chapter 6, if you want to open there while we get started, that would be great. That's where our text is going to be found. Lots to dig into this morning. If we have not met, my name is Chris. I am the lead pastor here at Jamestown Harbor. It's really nice to meet you, and I'm sure I've met some of you, and I will continue to meet more of you. And if I've already met you and I'm pretending like I've met you for the first time again, it's because there's a lot of you that I'm trying to get to know. So please have some grace with me as I continue to get to know all of you. My wife and I are super excited to be here. And things like this, where we get to see the backpacks down here being blessed, where we just get to say thank you and we all are willing to get up and move to the center and like kind of an awkward, not normal church thing to do, where we get to go and celebrate baptisms this weekend. All of those things are just a reminder for myself and my wife of like the kind of church that we are saying yes to. One, we get to step into the awkward together. Normally filming a video like Ben led us through is not normal. It's kind of a little bit awkward. Like we don't like to get up during service and move around. Like that's okay. We did it. Good job. And we get to like enter into really vulnerable and amazing spaces through baptism. Like the conversations I've had over the past week with some of you who are getting baptized and those who may say yes to saying getting baptized today, like it's just a cool place that we get to be a part of where God is moving and doing some really fun and amazing things. So, and we are honored to be a part of it. So please know that from the bottom of our hearts, we love being here. We love all of you and are excited for what God is doing in your midst. And so this morning, we're continuing on in our series From This to That. And in order to kind of talk about what we're talking about this morning, I want to show you a picture of something that I love to do as sort of a hobby. So where my wife and I live, I love gardening. Please don't judge me for the amount of weeds that are in my garden right now. We started a new job. We had a new baby. I've basically just reconciled myself to saying, like, whatever we get this year, sweet. That's great. Like, I'm done fighting the bunnies over chewing our broccoli and pepper plants. Like, we've put a 6-foot fence up and somehow the deer still get in. Like, our off to the right-hand side of kind of that, like, those are all cantaloupes on that vine there. Over to the right of that, you can kind of see corn in the back. It used to be much fuller and brighter, and like, there was a lot of corn. And one day I left the gate open and it was all mowed down. Like somehow the deer knew the one day that I wasn't going to leave the gate shut. Like I love gardening. It is this incredible space that I just can go and lose myself in for extended periods of time. I love growing cantaloupe and tomatoes. You can see some of them down in the corner there that are growing. Like it is just a really beautiful and fun thing that I love to do. And every year I go into it, I kind of trick myself into thinking like, it's super simple, right? Like gardening is this thing, like I put a seed in the ground, I water it, it's gonna grow and produce fruit or vegetables at some point in time. But I often forget that there's a lot of weeding that has to be done. And there are animals that I have to fight off and bugs that want to try and destroy everything that I do. Sometimes I go out there and I'm like, am I just killing this plant? Like, is it getting too much water? Like, should I have watered it when there were 42 days of no rain? Like, should I have done that? Like, I don't, maybe they hate the sun. Maybe they love the sun. Like, I don't fully know what I'm doing out there. All I know is that I love gardening. And I think part of the reason why I love gardening is because of something we're going to talk about today. It's this really beautiful metaphor where when I put something into the ground, every year I go out there and I just look and there's just dirt and wood chips and dead weeds. Every time I put something back in the ground, I remember that life can come out of places that look completely lifeless. Like every time I go out there in the spring, I just remember, oh yeah, I forgot to take those plants out and now they're bent over and dead and it's like nothing good. Like your garden does not look beautiful in the beginning of the summer because what ends up happening is everything dies and it looks like nothing is going to come to life again there. But eventually what I realize is life does come out of places that look completely lifeless. Because oftentimes what I can do is I can clear it all out. I can make it look all sort of nice again, and there's this kind of dirt. It still looks like there's dead, but there's this really remarkable thing that happens in gardening that I think is a beautiful metaphor, right? We put the seed into the ground, and maybe nothing is happening for a while as we look at it. Something might not be happening, but what we know about gardening is that underneath the surface, There is a lot happening that we can't quite see yet. And then one day, as we've all gardened or grown flowers, you put the seed in the ground, or maybe you've done this in your class, like your third grade classroom, you put the bean seed in the ground and you're wondering, like, is this going to happen? Is it going to take? Like, is this thing going to happen? And eventually there's this little, like, beautiful, kind of like, I don't know why I get so much joy out of it, but you see this little green shoot that sprouts up out of the ground. And every time I see it, I'm just reminded, and I get like a little bit giddy of like, oh, there it is. Like, this is a beautiful thing happening here, right? Like, this is the beginning of what is going to be a wonderful summer, because where it looked like there was just dirt, now there is this life happening and I get to tend to it. This place that looked completely empty is eventually going to overflow with life, barring that you don't have a baby and start a new job and let it just die, right? Like, this beautiful place where it is going to happen. And today, I think what I love about thinking about my garden and baptisms today is we get an opportunity to see that sort of work and happen. Again, it's not a garden that this is happening in, but in a lot of ways, our lives, for those who are going to be baptized, is this beautiful opportunity to see where maybe, whatever somebody's story is, there was not a lot happening in life, or maybe God's been working in your life for a while, or maybe it seemed like life just was not going the way that you wanted it to go, and it felt like this year was just not a lot of good things happening. But today is that moment to mark it and say, you know what? This is the beginning, like that seed in the ground of new life happening in front of our eyes. And baptism is a moment for us to mark the fact that something in our lives has changed. Something old is being left behind in the past that we don't want to have a part of our lives anymore, and something new is beginning again. And so maybe there are things that we wish we could leave buried that are going to stay buried today. Maybe there are places in our lives where we desperately want something new to grow, and maybe there are parts of our story that feel much more like winter than spring, and maybe we're the people that are asking the questions, if you're in the audience this morning, who are asking the questions of like, can anything good come out of my life? Can something in us really go from death to life, is the question I want to wrestle with this morning, and the answer to that is yes, it can. And I want to show us through Romans chapter 6. Because for some of us, I'm not going to take a guess, but I think most of us have things in our lives that probably fit into those categories, right? For us, there are probably those of us in the room that could honestly say, like, we don't want to continue living on this way anymore, right? I don't want to keep living like this. And so for maybe some of us this morning, there's a habit that we've had in our lives that we have tried to break. I was talking with a couple people this morning about, like, the good, like, Dutch, we can fix everything on our own sort of mentality, right? I'm Dutch, maybe you're not. I think it pervades a lot of cultures, right? We just have this idea that we can break or change whatever it is in our lives in ways that, like, we just have chutzpah, right? We just think we can do it. We think we can pull ourselves up by the bootstraps. And you've told yourself a number of times, I can do this, and it hasn't worked. And somehow we've ended up back in the same way that we've started. Maybe for us, it's like anger that we carry, right? We carry a lot of anger pent up inside of us for whatever reason. Maybe it's the way that we talk to the people that we love and we say, you know what? They're the closest people to us. It allows us to say some things and get away with it sometimes, but I don't want to do that anymore. I want to be different. Maybe it's the way you talk to people at work or the way you interact with business partners. Whatever it is, maybe there is a habit that you are trying to break in your life. Maybe for you, it's not something you're doing, but it's something that you're carrying, right? We've all had things happen in our lives that have impacted us and changed us, maybe for the better and sometimes for the worse, that sometimes things have happened to us in the past that follow us around like a badge that we can't get rid of, right? Whatever that thing is, you've made a decision years ago to do something that backfired, that now that follows you. Or maybe there was somebody who took advantage of you in business or in life or in relationships. Whatever that is that you feel like, even though not everybody knows those things, it just kind of follows you around and kind of is part of your identity that you no longer want to have a part of your life. Or maybe there's a part of your life where you just decided, like, this is just always going to be a part of my story. It's just always the way that it's always going to be. Maybe it's your relationship with God that has felt distant. Maybe for a long time, you went on a mission trip when you were in high school, and for years afterwards, that sort of like residual mountaintop high experience followed you. And then life just kind of kicked you in the teeth after you got out of college or a few years. You had some kids and now, you know, you have some debt and you're just wondering, am I ever going to get ahead? And your relationship with God has just kind of faded and you've just kind of accepted it. And you wonder, is there ever going to be life in that relationship again? Is there ever going to be that spark again where God can speak to me fresh and new? And maybe for us, our life feels a little bit more like winter than it does like spring in this overflowing garden. We've gotten really good at looking like we're alive on the outside, myself included. Look really good at making ourselves look good and alive on the outside. But inside, we can all feel at times like we're pretty dead, like there's not a lot happening, right? I don't know how many of you have ever gone into a space and you've had a rough season in life and somebody says like, hey, how are you doing? And that's like the dreaded question you don't want to answer. But we all, like, from the time we're little, we get trained to smile and say, life's good, right? Everything's all right. Some of you are better at that than I am, who can say life's not good right now. I am not one of those people, right? But we can smile. We can go to work. We can get our kids to the things that we need to get them to. We can come to church. We can answer good when somebody says how we're doing. But inside, there's part of us that's wondering, can I actually become different? Can I stop being defined by those things that have happened in the past or the things that I've done? And can I really become someone new? Is change only possible for other people? And can I actually become somebody new is the question that we ask. And what's beautiful is, I think what Paul is talking about in Romans chapter 6 is not just an experience that we live and we feel on a regular basis, but it is something that he and the early church were wrestling with as this new faith was kind of making its way through the Mediterranean area. As people were starting to follow Jesus and they were hearing about this life change that was happening in people's lives where they once had these, like, this kind of dead life. They wondered if it really mattered at all. And now Paul is hearing about this news in a church in Rome, and he wants to write a letter to them to help them understand the beauty that is happening and to kind of set forward what it is that they're actually experiencing. So, the book of Romans is a letter written by the Apostle Paul. It is, in a way, it is kind of like Paul's big book of theology. Like, everything Paul believes, he kind of just tries to cram into this one book. Now, Romans, you can probably take a guess at where this book was written to. Anybody want to take a stab at it? What city was it written to? Very good. Rome. Yeah, you can say it a little bit more confidently. Like, you don't have to, like, it's right there. It's right in front of you, right? It would have been weird had I said, like, no, he's actually writing to, like, Jerusalem or something. Like, that would have been wild. But Paul is writing to this group of people in Rome that, unlike the other books that he's written or letters that he's written, he has actually never visited the Romans. All of the other ones he has visited before. And if you read some of those letters with that context, you can understand why he says some of the, like, very brash things that he says to others. But in Romans, you get a very different tone of who Paul is. He's kind of like black and white, lays a lot of things out. But what he's trying to do is he's trying to help a group of people who are in the most populated city that they knew at that time in Rome, who were coming from various different backgrounds. Some of them were good Jewish people who had followed the Jewish customs their entire life. Some of them were Gentiles, people that were not a part of that faith, who had worshiped Roman gods, and they were trying to bring them together, right? There were people that had followed all the sacrificial systems, and they had done all these things, and there were other people who could have cared less about that growing up, right? They may have thought that that was weird and kind of disgusting that you would slaughter an animal. Like, they may have thought those things about each other. And now they're finding themselves in this space together, trying to make the early church happen. And there were these questions that were starting to come up of, like, who really belongs in this church? Do the Gentiles believe? Do the Jewish people believe? Like, did Jesus come for them? Like, we don't really know. Paul wants to answer that question for them. Who is closer to God? Was it the people who had been close to God their entire life, or was it the Gentiles who had worshiped other gods? They're asking questions of what do we do with all of these differences? And underneath all of it, there's this kind of question of does our past still define us? And what does God actually expect from us? Paul is trying to answer those two questions in this book. And underneath so much of that in Romans, Paul's answer is simply this. The thing that brings us together isn't our background, it's Jesus. The thing that brings us together is not our background. It's not whether we have all of these crazy cool things in common, or we had the same teachers in high school or whatever it is, or we came from the same city but moved to Rome. However you want to think about what brings us together, it's not our backgrounds that brings us together, but it's Jesus. And Paul very clearly states that because of Jesus, grace is for everyone. This idea of new life is for everyone, and everyone is invited into this new life through Jesus. And Paul spends chapter after chapter after chapter before Romans chapter 6 setting that up, that grace is all you need, that you couldn't earn this, and God gave it to you. But Paul also is anticipating a question coming, which he's going to answer in Romans chapter 6. There's this underlying thing that Paul has in his mind of he's talking about grace, he's talking about grace, he's talking about grace. People are loving the fact that grace is a reality. And there's this question that he's wrestling with of, if grace is something that everybody can have, does it matter how I live then? Does it really matter if grace covers all of my sins? Why not just keep going on sinning and living the best of both lives? Why don't I have the Roman high culture life, and why don't I have Jesus at the same time? Because if I can do whatever I want and grace covers a multitude of sins, why do I have to live differently then if I can just go and ask for forgiveness? This is the question that Paul is wrestling with in Romans chapter 6. And so we're going to read that together. So if you would, if you haven't turned there yet, turn to Romans chapter 6 with me. Here is what Paul writes to these people. What shall we say then? Shall we go on sinning so that grace may increase? By no means. We are those who have died to sin. How can we live in it any longer? Paul continues on. Or don't you know that all of us who were baptized in Christ Jesus were baptized into his death? We were therefore buried with him through baptism into death. And this is kind of our first part of the picture, right? That Paul is trying to say that there is this sort of death that he's talking about. There is burial that happens. Paul is saying, when there is this baptism and this grace that is received, there is a death and there is a burial, right? But Paul isn't finished yet. He continues on and he says, in order that just as Christ was raised from the dead through the glory of the Father, we too may live a new life. That's his gospel, his message, and the entire thing, from death to life. To go from death to life is incredibly possible because of the grace that Jesus has shown. And in this baptism, you rise with him into a completely new kind of life. And Paul points out to baptism as this incredible picture of what God has done. Now, I want to be clear, though, about baptism. There's nothing magical about the waters that we step into. There's nothing magical that happens when we go under and we bring back up. You're not walking into ordinary water as one person and somehow water itself changes you into a new person. That's not what Paul is saying when he talks about baptism. He's not talking about the physical sign of it. What Paul is saying, though, is that Jesus is the only one that saves. Jesus is the one who makes us new. And baptism is that sort of physical sign and representation and a visible way of saying that that is my story now, that whatever I was having in this sort of death and burial is being put into the grave under the water with Jesus, and I am being brought back up as someone new. My old life doesn't own me anymore. I belong to Jesus now. And baptism allows us as a congregation and people to physically mark that moment of the incredible work that Jesus is doing. We watch people go down, and we watch them come back up. And when that happens, these words that come alive, or these words in Romans chapter 6, aren't just these words anymore, but they jump off the page at us and are alive in some really beautiful ways. And so what I want to do this morning is I want to pause again, and I want to show the one baptism video from last year, because What I want you to go into this video watching now, understanding a little bit about what Paul is talking about, is that each of the people in this video have gone into the waters of baptism carrying something. Something that they want to leave behind, something that Jesus has freed them from, and they are coming up new people. And I want you to look at their faces when they come back up and try and tell me that Jesus has not done something really incredible and remarkable in their lives. And so I want you to watch this, and then we'll wrap up after that.
That same practice of baptism that starts after the resurrection of Jesus is what we're celebrating today. Even though each and every one of you have a unique story you step into the water with, you step out part of a new collective story that is the church, that is thousands and thousands of churches that have existed for the last 2,000 years, all of which stepped into the water to say, I want the shared story, the beautiful, redemptive story of Jesus.
Bless God when the world is falling. Bless God when the walls are falling. Bless God because he goes before me. Every chance I
I don't know how you can look at that and not see that there is something new and beautiful happening in those people's lives. I love the one of the guy who's like smack in the water, just like so excited out of his mind. Just the smiles, the enthusiasm that everybody has, because I think what those individuals recognized was that there is new life that is possible, right? Whether they were entering with some really heavy things or just wanted this moment to be marked, like there is new life that is happening in each of their lives, and this afternoon, we get to witness that again. We're going to watch people step into the waters and make that same declaration as so many people have done throughout all of the years. But the interesting part is that in this moment, life is not done. Just because somebody is baptized does not mean that their life is just all of a sudden new and bright and sparkly. Like there is still work that is to be done that the Holy Spirit will continue to do in on them. And Paul wants people to know that too, right? It's not just this one moment where you, as powerful as that moment is, we mark it, we celebrate it. And then the beautiful part is he writes that the church gets to come alongside those people and continue to live into their lives. That tiny little green shoot of life, to go back to the garden imagery, like that doesn't just keep growing on its own. There is this sort of nurturing and tending that has to be done in this space. This new life will continue and needs people to come around it again. And there's work to be done. Romans chapter 6, verse 5 says, "For if we have been united in him, with him in death like this, we will certainly also be unified with him in a resurrection like his. For we know that our old self was crucified with him, so that the body ruled by sin might be done away with, that we should no longer be slaves to sin, but because anyone who has died has been set free from sin." And Paul uses a very powerful image here, this image of slavery. He says before Jesus, there was this way that sin wasn't simply just this list of bad decisions that was made, but sin was this, like, it's this master that had his hooks, his claws in these individuals. Sin ruled people. It told people who they were. It controlled every direction of their lives. And Paul, what he is saying is that the master no longer owns that person. But what Paul also is alluding to is that sometimes we don't know where to go. Once we're free from that, we don't always know what direction to go. It wasn't just this moment where you're set free and that's it. Paul is saying that when we are dead to sin, that sin is no longer, it's not that it's no longer present, but there is work still to be done. Because before Jesus, sin would say, this is who you are. And afterwards, Jesus says that that's not who you were. Even though you may struggle with what happened before, you may still be learning how to live free from it. You may still be moments where you fall back into old patterns and old habits. Those things happen, but that thing that defined you is no longer your identity. It's no longer your master, and you get to learn to walk in a new life because Jesus came to bring dead people to life, and that is Paul's picture. That we get to walk in the same sort of resurrection that Jesus did from the time he came back from the grave to the time he ascended into heaven and the way he set up people's lives from then on. We get to continue to live into that reality that Jesus came to bring dead people to life. Paul finishes this section where he says, "Now, if we died with Christ, we believe that we will also live with him. For we know that since Christ has been raised from the dead, he cannot die again. Death no longer has mastery over him. The death he died to sin once for all, but that the life he lived for God. And in the same way, count yourselves dead to sin, but alive to God in Christ Jesus." In each of us in this moment, life has begun. It might be small, it might be fragile, it might be fresh in our lives, but something new is alive in each of our lives. And Paul says that's what has happened to us, that new life has begun. But don't confuse unfinished with unchanged, though. Those are not the two same things. Baptism is not you standing in front of a church and saying, "Look at me, I finally arrived." It is the work that we get to do, or we get baptized and we come out of the water and say, "I've begun. I've begun anew. A new life has started. A new life has changed." And that is what we celebrate in those moments. And so for everyone in this room, I want us to think about these two things. Are you living like someone who has been brought from death to life? Because Paul will not allow us to separate what Jesus has done from us for what Jesus now needs to do in us. He gives us this charge that we now get to go forward and we get to live differently. And the way that we live by this grace, it should shape the kind of church that we become together and the type of individuals that we get to be on our own. And so as a church, we are made up of people who have been given new life if we really live into that. And we get to become a place where people begin to believe that new life might be possible for them too. And so my question for us is, what kind of church do we want to be? What kind of church should we become if this is what we believe? The church that we should become is a place where we allow people to grow into who they actually are. We allow them to be who God is calling them to be, even though we don't have it all figured out, right? We don't have everything figured out. We will have failures along the way, but us as a church, it's not this moment where we say to everybody going in the waters today, like, "Sorry, you got to be right now, 100%, or you're out," right? That's not what we get to say during baptism. It is this ongoing journey. If we believe that in baptism, it is this place where new life has begun, we get to follow people along that journey. We get to watch people be baptized, and I hope we understand that we aren't just watching something happening to them, but we get to say to them, "We are with you." We will make these promises to them that says, "We will be alongside you, we will guide you, we will correct you, we will help empower you to go where Jesus is following you," because that's the sort of church that Jesus gets and tells us to be because of this good news. We get to be the church that says, "We know that you've just begun, and we love you in the midst of it, and we are going to help you along the way, even though you're not going to be perfect." And so regardless of you being baptized today, or you have been baptized in the past, for you, I wonder, what would it look like for you to live this week like someone who has actually been brought from death to life? We talk about next steps. Ben talked about next steps this morning. Like, another way to phrase that is, what is my next step? For some of you, a next step might be, if you've already been baptized, to leave something behind again, right? To talk to a friend about, like, hey, say, I might not be physically being baptized today, but there is this thing that I need to give over to the Lord again. Maybe it is stepping into the waters of baptism and you saying, this is me leaving something behind. That thing that is happening in my life, I want it to stay buried, and I need the help of the church in order to do that. For some of you, it may be a bit more specific. It may actually be signing up for baptism. For some of you, you may have had this on the back burner for a little while. It may have been something you've been thinking about over the past couple of years or the past couple of weeks. And maybe this is the moment now where after church, you pull out your phone and you actually fill out the application. There's no application process. That would be weird. You just get to sign up and show up to be baptized, right? Like, that, maybe that is this moment where you go online, you fill that out, and you get to physically say with all the rest of us, I want to leave that behind. I want to begin anew, and I want your help to do that. Maybe it's one of those habits or those identities that you've been carrying around for a while that you want to leave behind. Or maybe for some of us, to live into that question, it's just a little bit simpler, right? It's we want to open our Bible again. We want to pray again. Maybe it's been a little while. We want to take one small step forward towards Jesus this week that he's inviting you into. It means that you have a new direction. It means that you have a new future ahead of you. Whatever that small thing is or big thing is, we are excited to be the church that gets to do that around you. And for all of us, as we go through this week, there's one thing to remember: that you are not defined by who you were, that you are not owned by what once held you, whether that's the sin or the habit or an identity, because in Christ you have been brought from death to life. And we get to celebrate that today in baptism. And we would love for you to be a part of that. We would love for you to come out to Camp Geneva if you have nothing else going on this afternoon, to celebrate that alongside people, because that is one of the most powerful things that you can say in life, is that I am new and that I belong to Christ and I have gone from death to life. And that is worth celebrating together. So would you pray with me this morning? God, we thank you for the work that you have done in our lives. We thank you for the ways that you, maybe for some of us today, this is the first time where we are coming from death to life, where we're leaving things in the water and we're bringing up a new identity, as fresh as it is and as much work as it still needs, that we get to say in that moment that, God, you are incredible. You make a powerful difference in our lives. We have seen that and we want to celebrate that. And we want the church to be around us in the midst of that. So God, if there's anybody on the fence who wonders if they have done enough to get ready to be baptized, would you just take that idea of needing to be enough before you come to be baptized out? And would you just say, you are enough the way that you are by even thinking about being baptized? For those that are on the fence, would you help them just take that next step to cross that barrier and to say, like, yeah, I'm sold out for this. I want to be a part of this. Because God, we've seen what you've done in other people's lives. We've seen it in the video. We've seen it in our neighbors, our friends, our family members. And we want whatever it is that they have. So God, we are excited for what you're doing in our lives. We give all of these things over to you and the incredible work that you will continue to do. We love you, and we'll talk to you soon. Amen.